for anybody who is in the room, who's a Labour supporter, and who is of a nervous disposition, I now say, hang on. This is something, kind of very standard cephalogical trick. So what I'm doing here, I'm saying, okay, let's work out what lead the Labour Party would need to achieve various, over the Conservatives, they would need in order to achieve various objectives. If we take the 2015 result and just simply and assume that the vote for the SNP, the Lib Dems, UKIP, Greens, everybody else just stays where it is, and there's just simply a swing from Conservative to Labour. All right. Now the first one's quite easy. This is a 0.4% swing from Conservative to Labour. We assume it happens in every constituency. If that happens in every constituency, then at that point the Tories' majority is just about to go. So in other words, on the current boundaries, the Tories need a 5.8 lead in order to hang on to power, or to hang on to an overall majority. Then you begin to see the rub. What happens if Tory and Labour are even Stevens? Tories still win by 50 seats or so. What does Labour Party need to get to in order simply to be equal with the Tories? Nearly 4 points ahead. What does Labour need in order to get an overall majority? 12.5% swing, 12.5% leads over the Tories. Because Labour has lost so much ground north of the border, what it has to achieve south of the border in order to counteract that is, I would suggest to you, towards the ends of the improbable. And that, therefore, as a result, whichever of the four Labour aspirants to leadership, if they're trying to work out, you know, what they need to do in order to get the Labour Party back to power, any strategy that does not take on board what's happened north of the border is frankly not going to work. That said, some of you may be saying, well, hang on, there's another part of this story. Why is it that Labour now apparently have to do better than the Tories in order to win an election, when actually, back after 2010, the opposite was the case? Well, the answer is basically contained in the bottom line of this, but let me walk you through it. It still remains the case, right, because the boundary review didn't take place. We still ended up in a situation where the average constituency won by the Labour Party had about 4,000 fewer registered voters in it. The gap didn't widen between 2000 and 2015. The population movement out of the cities is slowed, and as a result, we're not getting the gap widening. The boundary review should now take place in this Parliament, and that will largely eliminate that difference. What the boundary review cannot get rid of and will still be likely to continue in place is the fact that fewer people turn out in Labour areas. As a result, fewer people vote Labour, but it makes no difference. Labour still wins the constituency. But here again is the reason, this is why that swing to the Tories in the seats they were defending was so important and has such an impact. Of those 75 really, really marginal seats, 45 of them are on the Tory side of the fence, only 30 on the Labour fence. The Tories win more constituencies by small majorities. And under first past the post, that gives you an advantage. But then here's the other thing, and this is a fundamental transformation of party competition in the UK. Until now, the Conservatives always ended up winning more votes in constituencies that other people won, because most of the places where the Democrats tend to win seats tend to be places where the Conservatives do relatively well, and Labour didn't. But of course, now all of those places have gone to be replaced by all these places where the Labour Party has just lost a seat to the SNP. So the Labour Party now is losing a lot of votes, not gaining anything, in constituencies won by third parties, i.e. by the SNP. And so it's these last two things which has turned a system which once looked as though it was going to be advantage to Labour to the Tories' advantage, and there's a boundary review to come. It's going to be tough for Labour next time around. Okay, let me then move on to events north of the border. Why did we end up where we are, and why, in a sense, the Blairite analysis of why Labour lost is frankly wholly inadequate. Let me explain. Labour's basic problem is that in the referendum last September, about 40% of those people who voted for it in 2010 voted yes. And for most people in Scotland, the May general election was a rerun of the referendum. But it isn't just about the constitutional question. It's also about something else. It's also about Labour not being seen as the party of equality by voters on the left in Scotland, and the SNP having captured that territory. I'll give you some idea here. This is some data from last autumn, just after the referendum. And I'm these are the voters who switched from Labour in 2010 to saying they were at that stage they were going to vote for the SNP. And these are all voters in Scotland. So here's the crucial bit. They're also more likely to be in favour of the redistribution of income by government from the less well off, from the better off to the less well off. These are folks on the left. And where do they think the parties are? Well, even amongst the Scots in general, people were slightly more likely to think the SNP backed redistribution than did the Labour Party. But amongst those who are switched, much more likely to regard the SNP as in favour of independence, as in favour of redistribution. Where did Labour, above all, lose in Scotland? Did they lose because people felt the Labour Party wasn't aspirational enough, had gone too far to the left? No. And so anybody who's trying to sort out the Labour Party now has to take on board that in Scotland, at least, whatever the arguments about south of the border, the problem is the party is not sufficiently far to the left in the eyes of voters, or at least it doesn't have a vision